Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, my grandson's introduction is not playing, so I'm going to have to pull it up here from this other link and then play it through my computer system. So hold on, please.
Welcome to Homemade Business 101. My name is Isaiah. I have the pleasure of introducing the host. You know him, me, everybody's hero, my best friend. Will you please join me, welcome my granddaddy, Baba Jahi.
All right. Thank you so much, Isaiah, for that introduction.
101.
Really appreciate that. That was from back in 2007 when we first started broadcast. And that was, 2007, that's correct, yeah. And at that time, Isaiah was 6 years old. He just recently turned 17, and so we need to get an updated voice from him. But main thing is I'm excited about the kickoff of the new season of Home-Based Business 101 here on Blog Talk Radio, truly listener-supported radio, and you're going to find out how much listener support that really is as we go through these intros. And I'm honored and I'm really thankful for being able to kick off a new season, the season of 2018, and kicking it off in Black History Month, where there's one of the biggest things about the whole issue concerning Black History Month is where are the black business people that we should look at, idolize, want to be like, example of, and just moving forward in the things that we do in our everyday lives. And so what we're doing today is part of our kickoff is we're going to have three different black entrepreneurs, independent thinkers, creative artists to be able to share their story and why they are connected with Home-Based Business 101, which is a project of Movements Unlimited. And that's so important because we have today with us the founder of Movements Unlimited. Most of you know her as Mama Jahi, but, you know, officially and formally known as Cynthia Williams, Desari's love. And she added to her name, Deep Pockets Jahi. And so, you know, we're excited to have her on the first segment coming up. And we're also very, very excited about the fact that we, Movements Unlimited, are the national travel editors for the National Black Unity News newspaper, in which we will have Mr. David Murphy coming up after Mama Jahi's segment. And we're also connected with one of our sideline partners all the way up in New York, the Big Apple, Miss Victoria Falk of Passionate Travel Incorporated. And so we're excited about today's lineup, today's show, and the things that we're going to bring forward on this podcast today. So without any further delay, or you know, we want to be able to bring on Mama Jahi, also known as Cynthia Williams, Desari's love, Deep Pockets Jahi. And so with that, hey, Mama Jahi, are you out there?
Habari Donnie, Jumbo. Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
That's great. I greet you. And the words that I learned when I was a little girl, who loved to read Mary Poppins books and Dr. Doolittle books, as I walked to and from the library up in the Walbrook Junction area, I am feeling super califragilisticexpialidocious, and I'm honored to be on this show. I greet you with a lot of umoja, kujichagulia, ujima, ujama, nia, kuumba, imani, and a whole bunch of hashima and love. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show today. I'm excited to be a part of this awesome, awesome 2018 kickoff of the Home-Based Business 101 platform. And, of course, I'm excited to be on the show with my husband of 31 exciting years. So thank you so much, Asante Sana.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So let's go back to, your childhood or whatever in terms of, you know, Movements Unlimited, and what was it that you saw yourself doing, your upbringing, your coming up, and then how that eventually translated into, I want to use the word, hobby at first, and then eventually a business, and then eventually a 501c3 corporation. So walk us through that.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Great. Okay. Well, I was blessed to be a part of a family that loved music, soul music. And before WWIN, I don't have a total history, but we listened to WBMA and WBAL. And every now and then a soul piece would slip through on the radio. But when WWIN and WSID came on board, my life just changed. It was all of this beautiful music that just went through your soul, just made your feet move and made your hips shake and made your arms move. And I have beautiful parents, Mr. Raymond Williams, who has just the Virginia, who's gone on transition to be with the ancestors. And my mother, who's still with us, will be 91, March the 3rd, Mrs. Edith May Palmer Williams. They were a loving couple. They loved to dance. They always had us dancing in the basement and everywhere. And we had wonderful aunts and uncles who had cookouts and different types of family events. And we were always invited to dance and encouraged. Things like my Aunt Elmer would say, girl, get on out there and shake them legs a little bit, and things like that. When they came over for Christmas, my brother Raymond and I, we danced the 12 days of Christmas, and I'm not a singer, but we actually sang it. So we've been doing this since we were little children, and we were invited to come down and look at Ed Sullivan and all the African-American acts that came on back in the day. James Brown came on, we saw him. The Supremes came on, we saw him, the Temptations. And then there were the June Taylor dancers and any kind of dance show that came on. So when Sammy Davis brought on Lola Falana, that blew my mind. And I wanted to dance like Lola Falana, which if you have followed her career, she ended up not doing a lot of dancing in the mid part of her career. She ended up doing more singing. But my family, I can honestly say that the Creator, our God, just put it in my family to love music and sounds and color and to enjoy other people, the entertainers of the day, whether it was Sammy Davis Jr., Flip Wilson, whether it was, as I was saying, Lola Falana. I remember seeing Debbie Allen live at Taylor's Mill when I was about 18 or 19 years old back in 1974, somewhere around that time. So it was a lot of things that inspired me. I had an opportunity to be on the Kirby Scott Show. I was one of the first African-American go-go dancers on that show for the teenage group, not the senior high school. This was the junior high school group that came on that show. And then later on, when I was about 22, I was on a show called Shakedown, and we shook it all down. I had a good time. The Kirby Scott Show was a very controversial show because the Caucasian callers in Baltimore City would call in, and they wanted to see some white go-go girls, because if you all remember Lori Saxon's show and the Buddy Dean show, you only had white or Caucasian people dancing as well as the go-go girls. So all of this here had to do with that era, my family, the music, the soul music, and just having the freedom in my family to be able to go down into the basement at 3233 Westmont Avenue. We had a nice deep basement. Put a stack of records on, a stack of albums on, and dance until I just couldn't dance anymore. So a lot of that is where it came from. I want to mention one other thing, too. There was a young man who lived up the street named Country, and he was having a cookout one day, and he put on music. You could hear it all up and down the block. I think I was between the ages of 9 and 12, and he played a song called You Are My Everything. And I found myself dancing on this song, just dancing in the yard, the front yard. And when it was over, there was this, the whole neighborhood out there clapping and cheering. And I mean, I didn't know they were there because, you know, when you get into your dance, and musicians know it, you go into what they call the zone. And when you get to that zone, you block out everything. And when I opened up my eyes, the neighborhood was there. So that was another encouragement to be able to know that this dance thing, there's something with it for me and something I can do with it. So that's the basis at that point. And then as I got older, I was blessed to, I don't know whether I went there first or my sister had me or help her there first, but my sister Kim asked me, since I had had some dance training at Walbrook Senior High School under Beverly Johnson, she asked me, could I help her with her group? She had a group working out at the Recreation Center right up the street on Westmont on Normount, carrying her little girl named Annette. And my sister Kim Williams said, look, can you help me? I'm older than my sister. I'm 10 years older than my sister. So I think she might have been 10 or 11, I think. I have to confirm it with her later. And she said, look, come on and help us out. And I did. And so I began working with her group. And at the same time, a gentleman named Abe Lally was looking for some dancers, like go-go type dancers, to dance with this band that he had. And the word got out at Social Security, out in operations, out at Social Security, out of Woodlawn. And when they got to me, I went over to meet this man named Abe Lally. He's no longer with us. He's transitioned also back in, I think he transitioned in the 1980s. And someone told a young lady named Kathy Alton. And Kathy and I met each other at the desk of Mr. Abe Lally. And after that short meeting, I talked, and that's how the group was formed, called Movements Unlimited. The name Movements Unlimited was created by Shanz Dillard and Hazel Reddick. They were co-workers, Shanz Dillard and Hazel Reddick. We thought of a name that was, you know, movements, and we wanted it to be unlimited in scope, in the type of movements we could do, the places we could go, the thoughts we could think, and the actions we could take. So I hope that kind of gives you a synopsis of the beginning of Movements Unlimited, which kind of is around, started with my sister Kim around, I guess, 1971, and then with Kathy officially, the name Movements Unlimited, the actual group, around 1974. Does that help?
Yeah, that's you know, a tremendous background, and, you know, just being able to see the evolution of how your actions, your thoughts got brought into being in terms of an activity that is still going on and has been institutionalized in terms of today's current things that are happening. So
yeah,
that brings
Well, I think with that, I want to share with the parents out there, it's the freedom. I think that my family gave me so much freedom within certain boundaries, like the basement of our house. You know, I had that space that I could dance in. I could play the music and I could dance. And then exposure to TV shows that it was positive images, the June Tower dancers, Lola Falana, Debbie Allen when she came on to TV to dance. And going to later on in life, actually going to different shows. But you had another question for me, so go right ahead.
Yeah, my other question was, so with all of that, tell us about your experience of raising your daughter and taking her through your view or your paradigm in terms of becoming a dancer.
Okay. It was interesting because I was taking dance classes under Urban Services at one point. And actually, my daughter was born while I was still working with the dancers with my sister Kim and the group, which included my brother Wayne. And some of the dancers came out of Walbrook Senior High School, lived on Westmont. And so my daughter was exposed to dance from the moment she was born. Matter of fact, even before she was born, I used to walk to the recreation center with my stomach poked out and with my leotard on. I had on probably a skirt, a pair of pants. And my sister would, like, cringe, like, Cynthia, why are you still trying to dance when you're, like, 8 months pregnant, you know? So that was funny. And so my daughter's been actually involved in dance since she was born. And while we were trying to get some official classes for her, we had some really good classes at Urban Services at Dunbar High School years ago. For those of you who remember, you could go there and take dance classes. It's similar to Model Cities, but it was after Model Cities. That part of the city had Urban Services, and it was great. I met John Taylor, and I took a lot of classes. And then he left to go do some things that he had to do. And, you know, he's still the Kinder Man. That's who he is. And, of course, that class with Maria Broom and some classes with Rose Daly and the people over at the Black Arts Center. I didn't get a chance to tell you that. So anyway, all after that, you know, came my daughter. So she wasn't born until 1979. And I would just do my workout and everything on the floor, and she would just automatically do like children do, crawl around you and try to mimic whatever it is that I was doing. So I enrolled her in classes at the Urban Services over at Dunbar. That instructor had to leave at some point. I think he was from Hawaii. He was an excellent instructor. And then I went to take her someplace else to another dance studio, but they really weren't. They had children there, but the dance instructor just wasn't interested in really teaching children. So I let my daughter finish out that particular session, and then I decided, you know what? I know this. I know ballet and modern. I can teach her this. So I began teaching her the official modern dance ballet that I had learned from Urban Services, from Annette Holt, and what I learned from John Taylor, Maria Broom, Rose Daly, all these different beautiful, awesome, these were awesome teachers. And I want to say something about them. For those of you who remember, Maria Broom came off of Channel 13 News, and she got into dance. She has the capacity of just taking anyone and teaching them dance. So my dance classes included people who, when I took dance classes with Maria Broom and John Taylor, they included people from as young as 5 to as old as in their 40s and 50s. So that concept stayed with me, their friendliness, their love for people, their willingness to teach everybody, even if you had no idea if you could even dance, that stood out for me. And their concern for your safety and getting to know who you are, that stood in my mind, and it transferred into teaching my daughter dance. And because I taught my daughter, other children wanted to join her, and that's where you and I met years later at 5 and 4 year heights. People, children in neighborhoods, you know, could hear the music, would look through the basement window and see us dancing, and they wanted to join us, and so therefore it created another dance group for me, which was a children's group. And that's when you and I met, and we, you know, we did the play, the skit, Black Butterfly. So she's been dancing since she was a baby. Officially, she danced with Maria Broom in D.C. She actually performed with the Dance Bringers at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial for a Peace Child concert. So she's had a lot of opportunity to dance and to perform with different types of concerts and things like that.
Okay, so that brings us up to contemporary, modern times, and Movements Unlimited and where we're at today. And it's, you know, it's opening the show up you know, for people that might not quite comprehend and understand the complexity of our relationship, is that you're the founder of Movements Unlimited, and I came on initially as a business manager and then ultimately became CEO of Movements Unlimited. So what was that transition like for you?
Oh, it was exciting. I mean, you know, we were dating, you know, and you were willing to help me out in a show at the Baltimore City Fair, which was probably my fourth or fifth show there. And one of the acts that was supposed to be a part of my show could not, it was a band, and they could not get through. They didn't have the proper ID to get through. So it was a miscommunication type situation. So I remember asking, and you told me you went to LSU. No, you went to the University of New Orleans, and that you had did boot dancing and poetry. And I remember putting you on the spot. Remember that? And I said, look, while we're changing, while the dancers are changing backstage, we need to act. We need to act out there for like 15 minutes. And that's how you and I really started doing that together, the performing part. And you stepped right on up there, and you did poetry, and you did the Zulu Warrior Boot Dance, and I thank God for that. And we had a very successful show. My sister, Kim Williams, had come back into the group and helped out tremendously with that show with a new dance partner, Marcella Jones and Hurl Jackson. They were people that I met again. It's so funny, all my dancers came from the Social Security Administration. So people at Social Security, like, they get the work done, but they also have other lives and things that they do. And Sunshine performed there too, my daughter, and my cousins performed, and some other people performed with us. We had a long-standing relationship with the Baltimore City Fair when Mayor Schaefer was in office, and that was a lot of fun for all the dancers, like I said, ages 5 to unlimited. That was another opportunity. Kathy and I, my first dance partner and I, and Burrell Holsey, we also had a chance to perform at the Baltimore County Fair. For those people who are history buffs, there was only one Baltimore County Fair held at Essex, Maryland, and I think that was back in 1974. Okay, and we have pictures of that. And just want to say one little thing. These things, you know, for those of you who either performers or non-performers, they're a lot of fun. The city fair was fun because back then they were just opening up the Inner Harbor and trying to beautify it. And as a performer, we got a chance to be put on a boat with all my luggage and my performing gear, my family, which was my entourage. And we were taken across the Chesapeake Bay and presented to the stage where we were going to perform. And I was, 18 years old. These things are exciting, you know, when you get a chance to do those things. But stepping back up, you know, all the way up in the 1980s, when I met you in 1986, then as you saw what I was working on, you indicated that we needed to make this a business. You saw that I was working with children, charging a small fee. So you helped out with getting the advertisement, and eventually, 1992, we had to play Black Butterfly again. It was due to receiving an award, the Cool Achievement Award. And in receiving that award, we had to be a 501c3, I believe, was the situation. And because of your expertise in that area.
That was part of the grant expectations, whatever. David Murphy has joined us on the line, so I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna cut him in here on where we're at, and then, you know, he can dialogue or communicate with us or wait to his time segment in terms of the show. But, you know, it's just exciting as we relive the history now. Your show, Jasari's Love Show, could you tell the listening audience what that's about? Because part of what we're doing today is we're doing the kickoff season and debut of shows that will be aired on this network.
Yes. Before I do that, I want to say hi, David, and Victoria's there. Hi, Victoria. And I'm glad you all are on the show also. Yeah, David and I go back a long ways with you and I. The Jasari's Love Show. The word Jasari means audacious, bold. And I chose that name because when I think about love, I think about love being a bold thing, to be as bold as you can with it, to give love 365 days a year, and to just consciously, intentionally express love in every facet of my life, which is a work in progress, by the way. But that's good. That's all good, because we have to learn different levels of love, which means we have to learn ourselves. And having a daughter, and my daughter's been through a tremendous transition in her life from being a dancer, you know, walking and skipping and jumping, to ending up in a wheelchair due to someone who had a misinterpretation of love, which was domestic violence, which was her husband who did that. The idea of love is just so important to me in this day and time, especially. It really hit me when President Bush was in office, and he was going after, I think, Saddam Hussein. He said that he wanted his head on a platter. And I just thought to myself, how many children may have heard that from the leader of our country, and how that was, in my opinion, not a good thing to say the way that he said it, with everybody being exposed to hearing it, and not a good way for us as adults to teach our children how to negotiate and how to make the world a better place. Because as you all know, the war has never ended, you know. So, you know, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, in my opinion, doesn't work. And the other thing I want to say very briefly is that parents spend every day of their lives, most parents, conscientious parents or loving parents, teach their children to try to work through processes in a loving manner. For the most part, is, you know, don't hit so-and-so, because you just tell the teacher, tell me. I know some parents teach you how to hit back and things like that. But for the most part, we try to get the children to do things right, and, you know. And coming from a family that has four brothers and one sister, you know, we were taught not to be fighting amongst each other. I didn't fight anybody in my neighborhood. I mean, it was not an ongoing thing, maybe one or two things in my entire life. So my life is based on being more compassionate and at least thinking about a better way to do things, which would always lead with love. So that's what the Jasari's Love Show is, just to express and to have all of us intentionally think about, work through ways, dig up and find ways to be as loving as we can. If we make a mistake that is not as loving as it can be, to say what you've been teaching us lately, and I won't even say what that is yet, because you'll go over that, you know, when you're ready, but to even apologize to someone and try to figure out a better way, a more loving way to do whatever it is we're going to do. Back to you.
All right. And what we want to do is we want to begin to start wrapping up your segment of this kickoff to the new season show here on Home Based Business 101. And what you were alluding to in your closing remarks was something that we came across where it says that we are responsible for the people that enter our lives. And since we are responsible for the people that enter our lives, is that one of the ways to address that situation, which Dr. Joe Vitale talks about in terms of a piece he has called Surrender, is by being able to say to the divine, to Almighty God, however you want to operationalize this, is that I'm sorry, which means you're acknowledging the fact that something did not go the way you wanted it to go. Please forgive me. It means you're asking for a humble expression of forgiveness, and then thank you. And by saying thank you, you're acknowledging the fact that whatever it is that you ask for, that God Almighty or the universe has responded by being able to say, you know, hey, you're welcome. And then being able to say, I love you. Which, to go through that process and really internalize it, it takes us to a whole nother level of relationship building. And so, you know, I just been happy that I've been able to share that with you, that I've been able to share with our listening audience that process of saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And being able to do that in which how we communicate with the universe, with God Almighty, the master creation, however we operationalize our definition of God in our lives, is that being able to do that embraces us to the point that we can get power out of our situations and our circumstances. And so, you know, I appreciate, you know, you being open to that.
I saw this honor.
You're welcome. Hey, Mr. David Murphy, what's happening out there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I need to be able to bring you up and give you a proper introduction as we get into this next phase of today's show. And, you know, you have a publication out right now, which me and my wife are part of the National Travel Editors. And again, from the paper, it says, greetings, my name is David Murphy. We are aware that the facts that there are many problems in the African-American communities and that there has been systematic discrimination, hate, and disrespect towards African-Americans. Our situation is at a boiling point, and if you and I do not work toward a solution, then we will see more blatant crimes against our people. Our unemployment rate will continue to rise, our businesses will continue to suffer, and our children will feel more helpless than ever before. I have a solution to multitude of our problems and situations. With your help and support, we can create tens of thousands of jobs for our people. With my evolutionary, I'll get back to this page. I'm trying to go to the next page. Hold on. Help of my evolutionary system, we can grow, connect, and prosper our businesses nationwide. Together, we can educate, demonstrate, and illustrate a new way of thinking by hosting seminars, workshops, tutoring, and facilitating mentoring by us and for us. We can no longer wait for or depend on outside sources to do for us what we can do for ourselves. It is that documentation beats conversation. I've been an entrepreneur for more than 35 years. I credit the Merlin's largest black discount directory in Maryland, Togetherness Unlimited Discount Directory. I published several newspapers, the Merlin Informer, the Edmondson Villager, and I collaborated with many others. I hosted two radio programs, Unity in the Community on WOLB, plus the National Portal Blog Talk, and was the featured guest on many others. I was a high-ranking member in many business opportunities. I'm a community activist and a family man, just to name a few. I mentioned those contributions. I made I may not to impress you, but to impress upon you my commitment to our people. I am a true soldier for the cause of social and economic empowerment. The National Black Action Portal, in its infancy, is already the largest resource of African-American business organizations, services, training, and educational tools in the United States, and we have only just begun. With your participation, this can be the largest evolution in United States history. With your support, we can take our rightful place at the table of economics, and it is written that the last shall be the first. Time has come for us to take a stand. We must stand in the gap for our children. We must stand up for our people. Remember that old saying, if we do not stand for something, then we fall for anything. Stand with me, because together we will never stand alone. As a people, we stand on the shoulders of great men and women. But now it's time for us to march into the promised land and take back what is rightfully ours. In order for our evolution to work, we need you to participate so that we can hire our people to operate our system. We need businesses and services on all levels to participate and grow their businesses. We need authors, motivational speakers, educators, and professional services to host seminars and workshops. Most importantly, we need you to join our membership and partake of the many services we will provide to enhance your quality of life. Support a system that has made to support you. Go to our website, thenationalblackactionportal.com, and look at the foundation in which we are to build upon. Make a commitment, suggestion, and join our evolution. We need you to become We need you because freedom comes with a price. Thank you for your time and patience. David Murphy, Chief Operating Officer, the National Black Action Portal. And this is from the insert of the National Black Unity News. Mr. Murphy, welcome to the show. How you doing, my brother?
Well, thank you, sir.
All right, where you want to start?
Well, seems like you kind of covered quite a bit there. Well, it's always good to start from the beginning. And from the beginning, you mentioned some things that I participated currently as well as in the past. And, you know, there's a reason why man do the things that he does, subconsciously and consciously. And sometimes we've tried to figure out why I'm doing this, why I act the way I do. Well, I kind of figured it out. And I took a personal survey, and I took a long look at over my life. And you know this thing called race has always played a significant part in my life. Even from my earliest remembrance, I can recall as a child wanting to be like someone who didn't look like me. Now, I know y'all heard about the doll theory. You know, if you put a white doll and a black doll in front of a black African-American child, often they will pick the white child. Well, in my case, you know, that kind of proved to be true, because when I was in my early stages in life, when I recall back to when I was 4 or 5 years old, there was no images of children that I seen on TV, on billboards, commercials, or anything else. And the only thing we saw, we read out of books called Dick and Jane, and which was white people. All the major TV shows was white people. And there was one or two black shows back in the early 50s, and that was a show called Amos and Andy, but they didn't highlight children too much, but they was... didn't highlight African-Americans in a positive light as well. And there was another show called The Little Rascals. And they had one or two black children on there, but they were the type of children I don't think you would idolize as being a role model for yourself. And so, therefore, I didn't have too much of a selection. And as I look back over my life, therefore, race, even at my early stages of life, played an important part of my life because as I took that survey from going to school, moving to the Emerson Village area when I went to the same school you went to, Brother Jahi, Rockland at the time. They called it West Baltimore Middle School now, but it was the first middle school in Baltimore City. But we opened up that school as sixth graders, and it was the first middle school. They went from the sixth to the eighth grade. And unfortunately, I had to almost walk a mile and a half through a gauntlet of white people who did not want us in the community. Oftentimes, I would have to fight to get to the school bus. Then once on the school bus, going out into the community where the school was, there were protesters protesting against us coming to that school. And I couldn't help as a child to understand why these people are so angry with me. And I couldn't recall me doing anything wrong or trying to hurt anybody, but yet they had such a passion of hatred towards me. And as I got older, I took it personally, and over the years, as I got teenager, I became very upset. I became, you could say, a rebel without a cause. I knew I just was angry. And I took that anger out on myself mostly, but it was pointed at them. And then as I got older, I got employed, and I'm the only black printer. I was a printer by trade. I'm the only black printer there. And the folks didn't want, I mean, the people downstairs hired me, but the people I had to work with didn't care for me personally or black people personally. You know, they did all kinds of unsavory things to try to get rid of me. And so that's when I began to study. I even read religious books, the Bible, the Quran, anything. I read biographies about black African Americans. I did all these things because it took all the strength of my body to go to that job every day. And then one day, things came to a head. I was called the N-word. And unfortunately for myself, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. All those years of frustration came to a head that day. That day, I tell people about this because it was a life-altering moment in my life. And I was so upset that I'm in a clear thinking, my mind clear, everything is clear, but yet I went from one point to another point. I got so angry that day that I was going to set that building on fire with about 40 people inside of it. That's how angry I got, you know, and I'm not a bad fellow. You know, I don't go around trying to hurt people. Matter of fact, most of my life, all I try to do is help people. But yet, I went to that level. But at that same time, something came over me that day. Just when I had the match lit and my escape route, a calm feeling came over me. And for the first time in my life, I realized that I was not the problem. You know, I took most of this time, all them years, I was taking that thing internally, like I've done something wrong or something was wrong with me. No, there was nothing wrong with me. They the ones have a problem with accepting people like me. And really, that doesn't even make any sense. I mean, common sense anyway. But I understand power. It's a power play for some people. But in any case, that moment is when I had, that evening I had a great moment in my life. I stood up all night and I came up with a business plan. I was inspired. I mean, when I really say that, I was truly inspired to write this. And it was a business plan to kind to solve the problem that I was going through. And it was a program called Togetherness Unlimited. And it was a directory, a black business directory, a discount directory, where we can keep money circulating and out throughout our communities. Now, that same day, I'm going to take you a step back. That same day when I had that unsavory moment when I was about to burn the place up, afterwards, I went back upstairs, and I read this report by the Urban League. It's called State of the Union. And at that time, this was probably back in 1976 sometime, somewhere back there. And this time they say we had owned over 300,000 businesses and served. We had spent over $250 billion annually. They said that amount of money equated to the ninth largest country in the world. And I said to myself, that's a lot of power that we have. Equate to the ninth, I mean, our spending power equated to the ninth largest country in the world. But unfortunately, the report went on to say that we are the only people in this country that do not support one another. They said Asians, Koreans, Italians, and everybody else circulate their money at that particular time up to seven times before it goes out to any other race or group of people. We're the only people that when the money comes in our hand goes right back out to some other people's hands. And that was our downfall. That's where we fell at. And that night, that's when I had an epiphany about how to solve that problem. And that discount directly was geared to do such that. And I went around, just before computers now, that's before everybody had personal computers and everything like this, I had to physically go around Baltimore City and seek out black businesses and services. And once I did that, I asked each owner, I said, if I were to bring people to you, would you be willing to give them no less than a 5% discount off your products, goods, or services? The business owners replied and said, of course they would. How much would it cost? And I said, it wouldn't cost you anything but the discount. So I had no problems getting businesses to participate with me. Then I also asked a few people if I sold them a discount card, which would enable them to go into hundreds of African-American businesses and services, would you buy such a card? Well, what would happen then? People would actually say, man, I'll give you money right now if you can give me such a card. And so I went and got myself incorporated, and I had to go back to those businesses, and it took me 2 years to do this. And I came up with a program called Togetherness Unlimited Discount Directory. We had a discount card. We had a handheld directory with all the businesses and services that was participating with us. And it was a win-win-win situation. The business owners, they got free advertisement and new customers. The consumers who bought the card was saved money because every time they went into one of our participating businesses, they saved money. And even though some of the places like beauty salons, clothing stores, some of our eateries, and so it was a win. And I made money by selling the cards. But another thing happened, Brother Satawi. When I went around and was at seeking those businesses, I had a chance to talk to those business owners, and they told me about their struggles. They told me about their products, goods, and services. The services. They told me about their contributions to our community. Man, by the time I did that survey, I was so proud of my people. I did not know they were so creative because nobody showed me that. There was no books that I could read at that time. There was no black histories in school at that time when I was coming up. And and the only paper we had was the Afro, and they only kind of highlighted those who could afford it or the who's who in the community. But they didn't show the average Joe businessman in the community. And so I said, people need to know about these people. And that's when I had the idea for my first newspaper, the Informer newspaper. I wanted people to know who these people was and what they was doing and how they were serving the community. And like I said, it was such a powerful thing that happened because I combined the two. I combined the directory along with the newspaper. And I highlighted quite a few of the business owners. And matter of fact, that's how I met you and your wife through the publication. And so a lot of things, like I said, it started from the beginning. My whole life was geared towards what I'm doing. This is my destiny, and I'm more than 110% positive. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what need to be done, and there's a lot of work to do. Even till this day, we're in the same situation. We have $1.2 trillion spending power now, and we still equal about the ninth or the tenth largest country in the world when it comes to our economic strength. And I do know even the power that we possess in this country, even if we stop spending, we don't even have to spend with one, just stop spending 50% of what we're doing. This country will fall to its knees. Everybody feeds off us. And so when I came up with the idea, I was inspired again to I never stopped the Informer in a sense. I just evolved it, put it that way. I went from the physical newspaper, then I went online, and I started doing things online. And what I discovered was I did a lot of research, and then over the years, I researched because I had a kind of a roadmap here in Baltimore of finding out who and where Black African-American businesses were. It was like a cookie cutter for the rest of the country. So now I believe I have the largest database in the world when it comes to the United States African or Black African-American businesses and services. And I want to just say something, interject 1 minute. When I keep saying African, then I say Black. And because, you know, some people have problems with being called Black. Some people have problems with called being African. And a lot of people don't want to go back to Negroes. And so until somebody, you know, everybody defined themselves one way or the other. But, you know, until then, you know, on a consensus basis that we can all come together and figure this thing out, who we are and what we are and all of this kind of stuff. Everybody has their opinion. So that's why I put African / Black Americans when I write articles or when I mention us as a people. But throughout the diaspora, there is a thing that in this country alone, in the United States alone, we have more power, spending power. We have more technology. We're involved in just about every industry in this country. We know how to do this, and we know how to do that. And now we're not going to have a no separate company or country or anything like that. Not that from my perspective, we would never have that. But we can take those resources and build our own businesses, build our own schools, build our own communities. We have the power. We have the technology. We have everything we need within our own people. We don't have to look without for nothing. And so that's the goal of the National Black Unity News. You're getting information for us and by us. Where I believe there's a few maybe circulated publications that go throughout the city, but I believe at this point, as far as my research is concerned, the National Black Unity News newspaper will be the only one that I know is a nationwide circulated newspaper at this point. Now, if somebody knows something else, please let me know, because I would like to connect with them, because we all in this together. And I say that I would like to connect with all the media, Black press, media, radio, every TV, whatever we have, because let me just say this, and I'm going to shut up, because I know you asked me one question, but we own less than 1% of the media. Less than 1%. So therefore, 99.9% of all the information or news that we're getting comes from outside resources. And so it is vital that those of us who are in the media, just as what you're doing, is inviting other media to come onto your format so that we can share information with each other, because it's vital importance that we share information with us, because this way most likely you would get it from us. That means it's for us and it's by us, and most likely we are not here to deter you or give you false information, because we all in this together. What affects you would affect me. And I appreciate what you, your wife, are doing and what you have done and what you're going to do. Thank you, brother.
Hey, brother. Appreciate you. Thank you. And let's elaborate on this a little bit more, as you're talking about institution building in terms of building a publication. And so you're looking also for, just like I said, you know, me and my wife, we are the national travel editors. And you're looking for national, not national, but local and state editors in each category of the paper. Could you elaborate a little bit more about that?
Sure, I can. Yes, the National Black Unity News is different from the average newspaper. Usually our traditional newspaper is like how there's a publisher, and then he hires this person, hires that person, and that's the way it's ran. But in the National Black Unity News, this is a collaboration. We provide the news, like I'm the publisher, and then we provide the format. But we invited different industries to join us, like yourself. Everybody who have, say, for instance, we have real estate people. We have travel. We have all just about everything you could think of that's going to be in this publication. But right now, we only have about 15 to 18 editors from different categories, and there's a host of different categories we haven't even touched upon yet. And we are seeking people to become national editors, state editors, and local editors. Let me define that. A national editor is like the Jahi said. They are national travel editors. Now, there's only one national editor. But if someone's in the travel industry, say for instance, from the California area, and they want to become involved with the paper and they in the travel industry, they can become California state editor. They will be under the tutelage, or how would you say, under the guise of the Jahis, because they're the national editors. And say, for instance, so they will be a state editor. So anything that comes from out of that state when it comes to travel, they will get proceeds. Matter of fact, so we have a thing where we defined not only you become editor, but it's almost like a profit-sharing thing. And so we have, like I say, four different levels of editor. We have a national, state, and local editors. And then we have each one of our editors provide information about who they are and what they do, pretty much. But it's not all about what they do. They also have, each editor has to share information to our readers and subscribers, information that can enhance their quality of life. So that means they are giving, not only receiving, but they're on the giving tip. They're educating us in their particular industry, some of the do's and don'ts about that particular industry. And so every time a state editor come on board, the Jahis will prosper from that state editor, and then that state editor will prosper from local editors. Anybody put advertisement in there, so we are not being competitive with one another. We are collaborating with one another. We're supporting one another. And at the same time, because the Jahis may have information about the travel industry on this particular issue, the people in California may come from a different angle with an article about the travel industry. It may be about traveling abroad or something like that. It could be all various information. But as the editors, we will keep, ahead of all of that. And so that means you're getting information from all of these different resources. That means so that not one editor is the all but all, when it comes to travel. So we can have 50 different people in the travel industry writing 50 different articles. I know that sounds confusing right now, but it's power. Because, like I said, when you break it down, most people use services within their own community sometimes. But see, now we work on a global principle. We also work on a state principle. We work on a city thing, as well as your local community. And so our goal is to bring you information for us and by us. And so, yes, we are desperately seeking editors, but there's one criteria that I look for in an editor. Not only do you have to be knowledgeable about your industry, but I look for a little deeper thing inside of you. I look for, some people may say, I have a thing what they call discernment. I look at the person's intentions or their heart, you might want to say. Do they have the heart to give? It's not all about receiving all the time. Do you really want to help our people? Do you really want to give out information that's going to be transformation in their lifestyle? And if you meet that qualification, as far as I'm concerned, then we can bring you on the board. And not only can it give you great exposure as to what you're doing, but at the same time, you're giving back to our community. And when you give, it's a principle, give and you shall receive. And so it's a win-win situation. When you become one of the editors in our publication, you best to believe that the people that are involved in this publication have the heart to give and willing to share, just like the Jahis are doing right now. Back to you.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're saying in relationship to that, David. And the most important thing that we want people to get from this kickoff to the new season show is that to be a gracious giver. Be a gracious giver. To remember that it's, as you were closing out what you were saying, it's more important to give
when you give, you don't anticipate receiving, but in the long run, you receive. And the thing is, there's so much power in understanding how that principle works. We're dealing with a situation through how a fundraising program that we have called Giving Through the Vortex, in which churches and nonprofits are able to get what's called a Vortex retail traveling host site that allows people to be able to book travel cheaper than anticipated rates that they would get at Expedia and other places, and save money. In terms of being able to save money, that money can go back directly with the people save is what the nonprofit or the faith-based community gets. And so we're doing a big push right now around turning travel destinations into travel donations. And so we just want people to understand that you know out here right now there's something that's going on in the industry where it's not about becoming as some people put out in terms of becoming a traditional travel agent, but about how to be able to take advantage of what's being marketed in the travel industry. And when you understand the dynamics of transitioning from one industry perspective to another, then you will see the types of monies that can be raised through what you're doing. And so I'm speaking kind of slow simply because I really want to make sure that I use the right words to capture the energy that's what's going on in the industry. Because the bottom line is you can take and cash in on what we call your Expedia market share. Now, what do I mean by that? When I say your Expedia market share, I'm talking about the fact that Expedia booked last year over $60 billion. That's what they booked. Everybody that has a church or a nonprofit, you have followers and supporters. Do a survey, ask them, how many of y'all booked with Expedia last year? That's your market share value. As you were saying in terms of, you know, the people in the community, when you started the Togetherness Unlimited piece, they, you know, you was looking at their market share value. How many people eat out? How many people go here? How many people spend money here? How many people spend money there? What is your market share value? Now, once we find a way to capture that market share value and be able to harness it and bring it on home, where all people do is they go to what we call click and order, is it's game over. I mean, you have monies coming in to your organization that allows you to be able to compensate people and compensate them for where people are going to go and how they book their travel. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we're really excited about in terms of being able to share more and more of that information. And I'm also excited to have on the line Ms. Victoria Falk out of New York, who is the founder of Passionate Travel Incorporated. Ms. Falk, you there?
Yes, yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Okay, I'll get to you in 1 second, and I'll let you know when your cue is in terms of coming back on. But I wanted to be able to close the segment out with David Murphy, and I know we still got Cynthia on the line. So, you know, we got David Murphy on the line, we got Miss Victoria Falk on the line, and we got Cynthia Mama Jahi on the line. And so for starting with you, Mama Jahi, you know, what are your comments and thoughts about where we are and where we have move forward in terms of today's show?
I was on mute, so give me a second. Okay. I'm excited. Hi, Victoria. Happy New Year.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm super califragilistic, SDLbocious. Yes, indeed. Well, I am excited because it is so important that we, as David said, Black people, African-American people, come together to encourage each other, to share important data, and to pull our resources together and to, you know, do this, the work that has to be done. And as David knows, we've all been out here for a very long time. As Victoria Falk has been out there for a very long time. We call her New York, New York, but she's a world traveler. And although David Murphy is known in Baltimore, Maryland, he's also a person that is of the world because he's communicating with businesses all over the world. And the philosophy of Movements Unlimited, again, I said the word unlimited, means that the things that we do can be things that can be done all over the world for people all over the world. And we have, as David said, a lot of people who are suffering. And one of the reasons is that our community is drained. And I know Ms. Falk is a part of another organization. I think the Black CEO, she'll probably say a little bit about that when she talks. But all these organizations are doing major work in trying to redirect the money that we're spending anyway, like you said, with Expedia, or maybe with another type of newspaper, or with maybe Walmart, redirect it to the shops, stores, businesses, and services of and by people of the African diaspora. So back to you, Fatali.
All right. Thank you for that, Cynthia. David, any comments on where we're at in relationship to the progression of the show?
Yes. I'm just picking back on what you were just saying, relating to the National Black Unity News when it comes to travel. As I was listening to you, see the information that you were sharing. See, this is the type of information that we want to disseminate to our community to let people know that the value of what you're talking about, how we can redirect that money back into our. Look how many people are traveling. Look how many of us are traveling. Look how many opportunities that you provide for people who want to be in the travel business. Look at the savings people could have when you educate them why it's so important to come to your vortex and look at what you have to provide for them. Look at the money, the time, the efforts, and everything else that can be saved and gained just by picking up this publication and reading what you have to say, reading what the real estate person has to say, reading what this. Now, this information coming from us, by us, and for us. And so this is what I'm excited about, because it's people like yourselves who have vital information, life-changing information, that can keep our future generation, not just this generation, but our future generations prospering. Because when you guys do well and when we do well, that means that we can build our own institutions. We can do all of these wonderful things that we are talking about. We can do them now because we have the capital to do so. We have the information that we need, and information is power. You just shared some powerful information. And so this is the type of thing that I get excited about, because of people like yourselves going out there every day, out there on the front lines, sharing information. And I get had the great opportunity of taking your information and putting it together and sharing it with not only people in the United States, but we go beyond, because we have a section in our publication where we are reaching out to the entire diaspora, you know, to the continent. And so we're making all kinds of strides and connections. So, again, I appreciate you and Cynthia Jahi and everybody who supports this format, this broadcast, because it is vital. And as always, as you already know, if I could be of any assistance to you with this broadcast, you know I will. That's what it's all about, us helping us equal togetherness. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Mr. Murphy, and I want to thank you for being a part of today's show. We're going to move on over to our last host, Ms. Victoria Fault, so that we can bring up and let her talk to us about passionate travel and let people know what days her show will be broadcast on this network. So, Ms. Fault, take it away.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited just listening to the conversation, knowing I'm in the right place at the right time. And, yes, as Mama Jahi said, I'm also the president of Black CEO New York. And what you all mentioned, we're talking about collaborative economic model. We're talking about profit sharing. And, you know, like Mr. Murphy said, we are collaborating, sharing ideas, sharing our tools, sharing our talents. And as we're creating wealth in our businesses, we're able to fund the causes that we care about. And that's something that I think we all share in common on this line, is that we have some causes that we definitely care about. And for those of you out there who love to travel, who are into entrepreneurship, there is nothing better than being in the travel industry. I'm so excited to be a part of the whole home-based business network with the Jahi family. And on Mondays from 3 p.m. to 3:30, yes, I will be coming to you live with Passionate Travel Incorporated and just bringing you some really great information, because like everybody else said, it is about information. Because once you get that information, your mind is transformed, and it cannot go back to the size that it was before. So we need to know that there are a lot of opportunities out there. And travel, you know, it's been so much for me. I used to be a social worker. I was a social work supervisor, and I spent 17 years of my life in the helping field. But I realized once I started my travel business how taking a vacation helps people. You know, there are 5 different health benefits to taking a vacation, and these are the things that we're going to talk about on the show. We're going to talk about, as we spoke earlier, I'm hearing everybody talk about raising money. We're talking about the non-deaths. Suppliers out there who have monies in their budgets right now to give to organizations. You just need expert at finding it. You just need to have a copy of your 501c3, proving that you're a nonprofit organization, proving that you're a church or a charitable organization, and I can help you, you know, get monies for your fundraiser. It's the power of anyway. Mama Jahi used the word earlier about what people are doing anyway. And yes, people are traveling. Don't ever believe that people are not traveling. Travel is an $8.1 trillion industry. So if you're trying to raise money for a church or for a cause, why not use the power of what people are doing anyway? Because then they don't have to make a choice. Unfortunately, a lot of the churches are closing their doors because the parishioners don't have the monies that they used to have. If you can fuel that money that people are spending already to take these vacations and have it be a win-win situation where someone can book travel through the church or through a nonprofit organization or use that vortex like Baba Jahi was talking about earlier, where they're able to get a great vacation and be able to benefit their favorite organization at the same time. How awesome is that? It's truly awesome. And folks, we have to stop thinking that black folks don't have money. Times are changing. You know, I'm blessed to have my own business with Passionate Travel Incorporated. It's, what, 10 years now that I've been in business. But also being in various positions with the Black CEO Organization and the African American International Chamber of Commerce, where I'm able to meet and connect with other entrepreneurs. And let me tell you, folks, we're earning a lot more. There's a segment of the population, and guess what? These are your entrepreneurs. Definitely benefits to have home. So, you know, those tend to be the wealthiest of our people. So for everyone who is saying that they don't have money or saying that they're struggling, there are black folks right now out here getting 6- and 7-figure incomes, working on pushing into 8. And it is possible, folks, definitely possible to do that with travel. Because like I said earlier, it is an $8.1 trillion industry. So what I do with Passionate Travel is not only book your trip for you, but I offer people the opportunity to get that income for themselves. When somebody contacts me and they want to take a trip, I ask them questions about what their plans are, and then I explain to them the benefits of business. And if it means to them and it's something they want to do, I teach them the process. Why? Because the more I teach, the more I grow, the more I learn. You help someone, they spread the word. It's a win-win situation. So we have more people than ever who are traveling for business, and they're traveling internationally, showing entrepreneurs how to work travel into what they're doing to expand their offerings. So you have people in real estate, right? So guess what? Now teaching them how they can be international in their business. We have people that are public speakers, teaching them how they could use travel, that now they could speak on an international stage. Anybody out there who has a team that they're working with, or who has staff members, or any type of followers, being able to show you how you can give incentives to your team, how you can give incentives and rewards to your staff and your supporters in a way that it doesn't cost you so much, that you're able to give quality incentives without breaking the bank. Now, how awesome is that? That helps a lot of people in their businesses, you know, because they're able to have people feeling good. You know, you're working with someone, you want to feel good about what you're doing, you want to feel appreciated. And guess what? All of that is offered through the travel program. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be talking about, you know, teaching people all the different areas of travel, because it's a part of taking that great vacation to be healthier, happier, and more productive. Just think about it. When do we work best, right? We work best right before we're going on a vacation, because we know that, okay, on February 20th, I'm about to fly out to Virginia. So I have to get this.
Did we lose Victoria?
I think so. Hold on. Let me call her back and let her know. dial back in.
Okay. While he's doing that, yes, I can still be heard.
Right, go ahead.
Cynthia? You have Victoria still?
No, I'm going to call and let her know to dial back in.
Okay. All right. Then I'll go ahead and she's in New York, and she may be
dialing
in between.
Back in.
Okay, she's dialing back in. She is truly a New Yorker, so she may be traveling. Okay, there you are, Victoria. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I get excited.
We lost you there for a second, so go ahead and pick up where you left off there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, folks. I'm always moving around. She knows that I'm here in New York, but I get excited talking about travel because it's really been a blessing for me. And, you know, just want to be able to share that information with people because travel has really changed my life. You know, there was a point in my life where I was very depressed, where I was having all type of health issues. And when I started traveling, it changed my world. You know, I went from going to the doctor like 2-3 times a month to, you know, not having those health issues anymore. So when I tell you that travel helps you to live a healthier life, I'm not telling you from theory. I'm telling you from what I learned from life. And I teach other people. I go to different health expos and, you know, teach people how they can live a healthier life. So we're going to talk about those issues because we know that in our community we have a high prevalence of diabetes, heart condition, cancer, all these things that are caused by stress. And what is the best stress relief ever? A great vacation. So, you know, I can go on and on and on about the benefits of taking a vacation. I can tell you over and over about, you know, the money that you can get. But we're going to share the different types of vacations that you can enjoy. What's best for you? If you want to take a trip with your family, how to get the best price, how you can save money on your trip, how you can have a great experience with all the different ages, whether it's your children, whether it's with the grandparents. If you're a business owner, how you can use travel to expand your business globally. So these are all the different things that we're going to talk about. And like we shared earlier, being able to raise money for the churches, for the nonprofit organizations, for charity. So there are so many different things, and when you tune in on Mondays at 3 p.m., we'll be glad to go over them with you. So I'm so glad, Baba Jahi, to be on with you and to be a part of the network. Thank you so much.
All right. Hey, glad to have you on. And as we wrap up this part of this segment, if you could share with the listening audience what it means to you to be a single mom entrepreneur.
Let me tell you. Well, being an entrepreneur actually helped me to be a better mom because when I was that social work supervisor, I didn't have any time with my daughter. And it was so crazy because I was getting paid to take care of children and families. I had 60 families I used to tend to. And I can remember when all of those children had their medicals done. I can remember their school conferences, their report cards and everything. But my own daughter would be at school calling me, "Mommy, where are you? Mommy, you forgot I had an award today. Mommy, you forgot I had a performance today." Because I was so stressed trying to get things done in the office. And there were times I had to work 9 in the morning to 9, 10 at night. And I'd be so tired when I got home. I didn't have the energy for my child. The babysitter was raising my child. I would take my daughter to the doctor, and I could not answer the questions. I remember crying in the doctor's office because I could not answer the questions he was asking me about my own child. But since I've become an entrepreneur, oh, my goodness, my daughter does not have to worry about, is mommy going to be there? When she tells me she has an event, she is so confident that mommy's going to show up because she knows that I'm in charge of my time right now. And it's so cute watching her talk to her friends, telling them how she's going to Disney World and how she's going to Canada. And her friends say, well, why you say that? What makes you think you're going to do that? And she said, well, my mom is a travel agent. She could do that, you know. And being able to travel with my daughter and have that family time, let me tell you, it's priceless. So definitely being an entrepreneur has helped me to be a better mom and have a much better relationship with my child, and it's the best decision I've ever made.
Okay, okay. One last question. As you look at your future, and I know people at times say the future is so bright, you have to put sunglasses on to, you know, so they don't get blinded. How do you see your future as we all progress and move forward in this industry and then also in this tremendous, fantastic company?
Well, I see myself growing globally, you know, just working harder to spread the word about what we have and, you know, about the benefits of travel, because when you share the information, you're saving lives. You know how many people get heart attacks because they don't have enough money? Like, financial stress is a big killer. You know, people worrying about how they're going to take care of their families and husband and wife fighting about the bill. So if you can help someone increase their income, you know, you're helping to improve family conditions, family lives. So I'm just working on getting the information out there to as many people as possible, just being that messenger, you know, the goal, being able to teach on a greater level.
All right. Sounds great. And as we ready to go into the wrap-up section, we still got Mama Jahi on the line. Mama Jahi, do you got any questions for Victoria?
Yeah, just one real quick. I know you've done a lot of traveling, and so which place that your daughter went was the bomb?
Well, let me see. She's been to Disney World. She's been to Bahamas. She's been to Canada. We're planning on going to Paris. But the vacation that she really, really enjoyed was the very first one we took together. And that was, and she loved that because that was a cruise that I got for free for being a travel agent. And she was so surprised. Like, we get to cruise for free? Wow, Mommy. So we traveled from New York on the Carnival cruise, and we stopped in Orlando. So when the ship stopped in Orlando, I said, come on, baby, we're going to Disney World. You know, so we spent about 8 hours in Disney World. And then the next stop was Nassau, Bahamas, and Freeport, Bahamas. And she just had a ball. You know, and so that was her best vacation because that was the very first one that she and I had together.
That's beautiful. Absolutely awesome. Glad to hear that. Back to you, Satali.
All right. Yeah, we're doing the wrap-up. David Murphy has just rejoined us, and I just want to get some closing comments from each one of y'all as we wrap up today, kick off to a new season show here on Home Base Business 101. And I will close out with the last words. But, okay, no, David's gone. All right. But anyway, as I was saying, closing comments. From each one of y'all, and then I will wrap up today's show.
Let's see. Well, you know, I just want to say it's going to be a great season. We are in the right place at the right time. people are hungry for information right now on how they can live well as far as lifestyle, and folks want to travel. So now's the time to show them how they can enjoy lifestyle and also increase that income. So I'm grateful to be able to be on with you all and really promote home-based business in the largest industry in the world. So thanks again, and, you know, excited to move forward. And you, Mama Jaheen, what's going on?
Hey, yes, well, I'm excited as we're going, as we are in 2018, to be a part of an opportunity where parents have so many challenges now. And, you know, the homicide and the rate of young people taking their own lives has increased. And I believe that if more people would travel and take advantage of the activities, some of them right under their noses. If you're living in D.C., take a trip to New York. If you're living in D.C., take a trip to Virginia. Or as Victoria said, just go ahead and get on a cruise and go to Bahamas. Save up your nickels and dimes. Because when we can show somebody better, they'll know better and they'll understand better. And at the same time, create businesses and work together and businesses like this travel business where your children can participate, as Ms. Victoria's child has participated and my grandson has participated. It gives them hope. It shows them they can be in charge of their own destiny. It gives them an opportunity to plot a course. As Victoria said, it's so easy to pull something on the vortex and say, Mom, this is where I want to go. And it's not always expensive, people. Before an improvement in your mental health and your physical health and your family's health and your community health is priceless. Thank you.
Okay. I see David Murphy has rejoined us, and we're closing out today's show with closing comments. Any closing comments that you'd like to be able to share with the listening audience, Mr. Murphy?
Yes. First of all, I was listening to y'all on the computer. That's why I didn't want to disturb, you know, with noises in the background. But in any case, I just wanted to first give thanks to God for allowing me to be on your show today. And I'm thankful for that you have in this format and the guests that you have on the show with you. But I also want to leave people with this. You know, all things are possible. And you know, it's people are rising up now to make differences now, and we need to connect with one another. We don't need to be in competition. We need to embrace one another. And if you're that type of person that want to reach the United States and beyond, if you have a business or service or something that of positive to say, well, contact me. I can be reached at 443-455-2373. Again, that's David Murphy, the National Black Unity News, 443-455-2373. Thank you, sir.
All right. Okay. So thank you for that. And I'm going to close out with this commentary as we wind down for the day. Is that part of one of the things that my teacher and mentor has shared with me a long time ago, that there's two ties in history and transition. One is the rising tide of history and the dying and the dissolution of civilization. And we belong to the rising tide of history. It's so important that we embrace that, understand that, and comprehend what that really means. That, you know, people all across the globe are rising to reclaim their place in the future and forward of how humanity evolves and goes. Nothing's going to stay the same. It just can't. You know, and the thing is that it's important that we understand that everything changes. Everything changes. Who would have thought in 2016 going into 2017 that we'd have Donald Trump as the president? But I don't want to digress into that. But the most important thing is that we're part of the rising tide of history. People are becoming more and more aware. People are becoming more and more spiritually enlightened. And with that spiritual enlightenment and becoming more and more aware, is that we all are embracing ideas that is helping us embark on situations and decisions that lead us to a new plateau and a new understanding of what human possibilities are. So it's important that we embrace those dynamics, deal with them, might not totally understand them. Lord knows I don't at times. But be ready for the embracement that it takes us on and be prepared to stand the course and deal with how the transition and the transaction propels us forward and puts us in a better place. So with that said, hey, this is Baba Jahi signing off for the day in terms of today's broadcast. And I just want to thank each one of our guests who were on the show today to share their particular commentary and their ideas and how they can help us be able to propel forward. So with nothing else being said, I'm going to, unless we got somebody has a closing comment, and I'm going to end this episode. Any closing comments?
Good night, and have
good
a
night.
Great
All
week.
Right. Yes, good night, everybody. Live passionately.
All right.